Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2, the podcast covering Division III sports through interviews with those involved in Division III. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to hit that subscribe button. If you're listening on any other platform, make sure to follow the show. Also follow our socials at Not Even D2 if you're looking for some more Division III content. And we definitely have some great things in store that we're excited to release to all you guys. So definitely be sure to keep supporting us. We appreciate all the support. On today's episode, we have Raheem Anthony, who had a great career. He was a D3 Hoops National Player of the Year in his final year at the Division III level, and then transferred Division I, where he was second team All Summit League. And we're going to talk about him a lot in the next few minutes. But before we get into today's episode, want to give a little sneak peek on what's going to be happening with Not Even D2. So we definitely got a few episodes with some high-profile guests coming up. I think you guys are going to enjoy that. And we're actually traveling to Dayton, Ohio, where we'll be watching the TBT tournament. We got our own media passes, which is fire for us. We'll be watching We Are D3 mostly, but also talking to every team that's there. So it'll be a good time. And, I mean, this is just a great experience for us, but I'll let you take it from here and what you're expecting from not only the tournament, but just the podcast coming up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, from day one, when we first started this, you know, I said, there's no ceiling to what we can do together. You know what I'm saying? There's really, I don't want to put any limits on us. And I think we've shown that we've exceeded all expectations for most people, I feel like, and even exceeded our own expectations, you know, even though at the end of the day, I think we knew what we had and we knew that we had something special. I think we've just grown so much and seen so much support over the last couple of months. You know, we started this in February and it's July now. So, you know, that's what, 5 months, you know, not even 6 months yet. So that's the first thing. That's just dope. You know, we're getting this opportunity to go out there, to go out to Ohio. I've never been out to Ohio before, so it's my first time even traveling that way. But for Reg, Top Shelf, Coach Harris, the We Are D3 organization, to give for them to give us a chance to do this, you know, opportunity like this is like something that not a lot of people get. You know, like these guys are going to be playing on national television on Saturday, you know, Fox Sports 1, and not a lot of D3 guys can say that, you know, they even were even involved with a team like this, let alone play. You know what I mean? So those are all really great things that, you know, I'm excited for. And obviously, like you said, we got some really good guests coming up that people are going to enjoy. But I think there's something that I want to talk about with you. I mentioned this in the episode with Raheem. Obviously, like you said, Raheem was a really good player for St. Thomas, and he also played very well at St. Mary's. He had a really good career there. He was pretty sure D3 POY, his region at least. And he was just a good player, you know, physical, dunking the ball. You know, he was getting up some threes at St. Thomas. But we had a conversation during the episode about, you know, a theory that I have. And I don't think I'm the first person to ever say this or maybe think this, but I said it on air. And basically my theory was that you could take any, I think, first team all conference player from most of the top leagues in Division III. And I think most of those guys can go play, and girls can go play at a Division I school, low or mid-major, and have a pretty significant role in the team, either a high-level role player or even starter. Not the guy, starter for a lot of these teams. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on that. I don't think you really spoke too much about what I said, but I wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, well, first I want to clarify something. In the episode, I said it's our theory, but this is Ruta's theory. I'm just agreeing with him, so it's definitely not an our theory. He came up with this, so I definitely, when you first told me, it was kind of like shocking, like, no way. But then when you start thinking about it, it's like, this is not crazy at all. And this is actually like, it's going to be put to the test for sure. But I definitely agree 100%. And I feel like not just Raheem's story, but St. Thomas's story is like a good example about not just players, but like as a team or as a program. You and I were talking about this recently, how like some of these programs, they're led by great coaches and they have built a reputation to be dominant in Division III every single year. And St. Thomas is a good example of this because they were Division III for countless years. They were dominating in the MIAC And then when they transitioned to Division I, the first year they won 10 games at a Division I level. First, that's impressive in itself. They're led by a great coach and Coach Tower. And I like that he didn't try to just break the whole program up and bring in all these Division I guys. He was like, I'm going to keep the same roster and we're going to start a 6'5 center and we're still going to win games. And then the next game or the next year, they win 19 games that year. Following up to this past year, they won 20 games and they're competing against Pac-12, Big East teams. And it's not like a crazy difference in the level of competition. Like these are, in quotes, Division III guys if they were in the MIAC, but now they're at Division I level and they're still having the same success, maybe not winning conference championships. They lost in the semifinals the past 2 years, but they're still competing against the best programs and making it competitive or winning these games. So I feel like your theory is, it speaks a lot to like the individuality level of players. Like there's great players in every division, but also like as a team and programs, these programs are at Division III, they're able to compete Division I at times. And I definitely appreciate and respect you coming on air and saying that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not afraid of, you know, people being like, oh, that's a bad take or, you know, clown. Like, I'm not afraid of that. You know, I believe what I believe and I know what I know. You know what I'm saying? That's what my high school coach used to always say, that I know what I know. And I know what I've seen in Division III, man. I've seen some hoopers, man. I've seen it here on my own team at Utica, right? Like my own teammate, Deon, right? I've known Deon for 4 years now. I've seen him play against the top Division I players that some guys who've gotten drafted this year in the NBA draft, first and second round. I've seen him play against some of these guys and give them work. And he's playing Division III and he was killing as a sophomore. You know what I mean? Or my boy Dame Call, for example, right? He was getting scholarship looks coming out of high school, right? So I really think that, you know, across Division III, that we have a lot of good hoopers, bro. And I don't think, like you said, I don't really think my theory is really too far off. Like if you look at, you know, NESCAC sends a couple guys D1 for the last couple of years. They've been sending guys D1, right? Or just all around Division III, we've seen an influx of D3 guys taking that last year and going D1 and testing themselves, or maybe having those last 2 years of eligibility and leaving. Or even some guys I've heard will put their names in the transfer portal, see what they get, and they'll maybe sometimes get some Division I looks, but come back to Division III level because they love it that much more. You know what I mean? Yeah, so I think it was a good conversation. I don't think Raheem really agreed with me all the way. he said, he was like, I don't know about being the guy, you know, but I didn't say that. I don't think that, you know, a D3 guy can go in there and be like, you know, main scoring option. I'm just saying like in terms of role player and like he said, coming in to edit the game and, you know, playing high level minutes for them when they need to close, when they need to close the game out. So it was a good conversation though.
Yeah. And just to add on to, in quotes, the guy, like, I don't think that's too crazy either. I think a lot of when somebody is determined to be the guy or the best player on the team, that has a lot to do with opportunity. And for example, like Raheem Anthony, he was given that opportunity at St. Thomas, and he was arguably the best player on that team, second team All Summit League, along with his teammate at St. Thomas. But that in itself just shows like they can be the guy, these Division III players. And also, I just want to spin back on something. St. Thomas, they're still bringing in Division III guys. Mm-hmm. Like, I think at least two players from Division III are now transferring to St. Thomas and going to be playing at the Division I level. And I won't be surprised, like, literally at all if St. Thomas is now, like, the best team in the Summit League. They lost in the semifinals the past 2 years, and they're going to continue to keep growing. And they also have a great coaching staff, overseas guys that have Coach Tower and Coach Maker, who coached a long time at Williams, who's a great Division III program. So I respect Coach Tower. He's trying to build something special over there and he understands the level of competition and talent that there is at Division III. So you can only respect something like that. And we'll definitely be rooting on St. Thomas. But I want to talk about a little more TBT, bro. Like, one, we're going to support We Are D3, and they got a tough matchup in Sweet Home Alabama, a team in the TBT tournament with the best players from Alabama. And they got the 4 seed this year. They're not an underdog anymore. Like, they're, in quotes, the favorite. So I'm excited to be around that type of environment and see how Coach Reg is as a coach. We had him as on the podcast, and he wasn't a coach at the time, but now we're going to see firsthand like how he is, how he's designing plays, how he's building this roster together. And there's a ton of great hoopers on this roster. So I'm just curious what you think and what are the expectations, even though we're not on the team, but we have a big, like, not impact, but we're going to be heavily involved.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely got some dudes on this squad, bro. I'm not going to lie. Like, you know, obviously we know Sobel, you know, Jeff Hunter, Isaiah Gathers. And then, you know, but I mentioned this in the episode, Reg, Ty Nichols is super tough. You know what I mean? So they got some dudes, bro. They got some dudes, and I'm excited to see them hoop. And I really think this is the year, man. They got a good seeding. I think this is the highest seed they've ever gotten. And they got the bigs this year, I think, to do it. Like, they got the depth to do it this year. And it's just an exciting time to be part of this program, because this is really a good chance for them to make history, get their first win, and that'd be a really big thing for Division III, I believe. Yeah. But to talk a little bit more about the TBT, I mean, I'm excited to watch some high-level basketball, bro. There's some dudes, like, on the other teams too, bro. Like, just doing research on the other teams. Like, I got some guys, you know, listed here. Yeah, so, for example, we got, you know, Jordan Seibert, right, who he's on the Dayton team, and he was the leading scorer each of the last 2 years, in 2014 and 2015, where Dayton actually went to the tournament. And he was A-10 first team all conference and most improved player. He didn't really play. I believe he went to Ohio State before going to Dayton, and he balled out over there. So watch him. He was a big player for them last year. Even though they lost to India Rising, he was a big hooper for them, and he's super tough. So him, I'm watching out for him. Darius Adams, who's a legend over in China, that I'm learning. I just learned about. He played in China, former D2 guy, which is kind of dope. He was a D2 All-American, NABC first team all region. He led D2. He was set top 10 in D2 in scoring with 23.2 points per game. And I'm pretty sure he's like a sub 6 foot guard. So that is OD to me, like, for him to do that. I mean, there's so many hoopers, bro. Like Jeff Gibbs, who is a legend for Otterbein, bro. He was All-American in football and basketball. So it's just like, it's crazy, bro. There's so much good talent. I know you probably got some guys in mind that you want to name.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at each team has about five guys that you can say are like dead nice. So it's going to be fun just to see all the talent, but like a team like the guys, St. Louis, one, mm-hmm. they have a YouTube channel where they're showcasing all this talent and they're getting a lot of popularity from that. And now mm-hmm. they're trying to win some money through the TBT. They got guys like Earl Barron, who went to Memphis, played under Coach Calipari, went to the NBA. He was a 1,000-point scorer in college, but he went to the NBA, won a championship with the Heat. You got guys like Jordan Bell, who's won a championship with mm-hmm. the Warriors. And there's just like NBA, former NBA players, basically everybody in the tournament has played overseas. And then there's also a team called Rise and Grind, who has a pretty – we would respect this, their mission of starting the team. It's D2, D3, and NAIA ballers who are trying to get some more opportunities. So yeah. There's just a ton of great storylines, and I hope that we soak it all in. But at the end of the day, you know we're there for, bro.
Oh, no. We room for We Are D3 all day. But I'm definitely excited to watch some hoops, bro. I seen a comment online, too. Like, this is the March Madness for like overseas hoopers, you know what I'm saying? Or like former college hoopers, you know, this is like their March Madness. And you could see, bro, when they're playing hard as hell. Like you're playing for $1 million, bro. That's regardless of how that gets split up, bro. That's good money going in your pockets, bro. So guys want to win that, you know? So it's exciting, bro. I'm excited to watch it.
To like, think about that. So say that it's $1 million and it's split between 15 guys. Like some of those guys are going to be taking home a whole overseas season. So basically like that's a ton of money to provide for your family. And that shows why they're going so hard. But also like something I've been watching the TBT for some years now, just being a Syracuse fan to start, but just growing to love the TBT. The Elam ending basically is the final 8 minutes of the game, the time goes away and it becomes a target score. And the team that's winning, you add 8 points to their score, and that is now the target score. So the first team to get to that score wins the game. And I feel like this could be implemented in higher levels of basketball or just some levels of basketball, because it really makes each possession of basketball that much more important. When there's 8 minutes left in the game, it can be like, all right, we don't got to worry until crunch time the last 2 minutes or something like that. But the Elam ending makes it this possession, I can't, no matter what, I can't let my guy score, or they're that much closer to kicking us out of the tournament, and I no longer get that split of $1 million. So it's definitely just going to be a fun environment. We don't got to keep talking about it. We talk back to our episode with Raheem. He's definitely, you mentioned a little about his game, but he can score it at all three levels, very athletic. And you can see, like, he said in the episode, he thought he was Division I out of high school. But in my honest opinion, he definitely was. Like, just watching his film, even his freshman year, a type of athlete like that that can score from the outside, it's pretty clear that he could have played Division I. And he proved when he got that opportunity that he was built for that level. So indeed, we talk about a ton with him, you know, what the commitment like to Division III was for him, how St. Thomas was, you know, transitioning D3 to D1, and then what's next for Raheem Anthony. I think you guys will be pretty interested in that. So definitely respect your theory going on air. Mm-hmm. Definitely stay tuned to listen to that, and let's get into the conversation with Raheem. All right, we're here with Raheem Anthony. How you doing today, bro?
I'm good, and you?
Just chilling.
Yo, we appreciate you taking the time out of your day to get on the pod. We know you know you were telling us a little bit about the camp that's happening over at St. Thomas, and I know how those, you know, day camps might be tiring, you know, a bunch of little kids running around and stuff like that. So appreciate this, bro.
Yeah, no problem.
Before we get into a little bit more about your basketball career, I want to hear about, like, what's life like outside of basketball? You just finished school up. What you been up to?
A lot of work, working out. I've infiltrated a little bit of yoga here and there. Trying to find new hobbies to do when I'm not playing basketball, because that's, like, the majority of my life. And, yeah, like I said, I've been working these camps, but other than that, nothing really.
So, obviously, you know, reading up a little bit about you, you're from Chicago. So, are you a Bulls fan? And if yes, I apologize about that. I know they haven't been that good recently, but tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm an unfortunate Bulls fan, man. It's been a rough couple years. We need Zach LaVine out. He don't want to hoop for us no more, bro. We cool off him, bro.
No, I feel that for sure.
I'm wondering, so I'm a Knicks fan, and Tom Thibodeau is the head coach of the Knicks now. Are you a Tom Thibodeau hater? Do you love him? Like, what's your opinion?
Nah, I love Tom Thibodeau.
Okay.
I love Tom Thibodeau.
All right, I respect it. So let's get into a little bit about your career. You're from Chicago. A ton of great basketballs in Chicago. You know, NBA players like Pat Bev, Anthony Davis, D. Wade are all from Chicago. Your graduating class actually had Ayo Dosunmu, THT, just to name a few. And I was listening to a podcast recently that was saying, like, in Chicago, the different sides, like, West Side has their own identity. Like, they might be talking crazy to you during the games. The South Side is, like, the best hoopers, they were saying. So just talk about your time in Chicago growing up and hooping in that area.
Yeah, I'd say a lot of the sides have different identities. Definitely the West Side of Chicago is a lot more defense. South Side is a little bit of more of both, but they had real scorers, kids that could really score the ball. And I feel like the North Side is just a mixture of both of those things, you know, like intensity on defense and being able to score. But, yeah, I feel like Chicago has built me and it's set in stone, like, how I play, and it's built me for times like these in college.
I got one more quick question about your time in Chicago. So you went to DePaul College Prep. You were first team all league, and your team actually finished third in the Illinois State Tournament. I noticed that, like, the alumni for DePaul College Prep, there's, like, a ton of great hoopers. So
Like, what was the environment playing with a bunch of great guys? And tell the viewers a little about your high school experience.
It's always fun to play and see some of those guys that either went Division I for either football or basketball, especially in a powerhouse like our school. There's a lot of great dudes that's come out of that school, especially the past couple years. They're about to be three-time state champs now. Mm. I play with Perry Cohen, who went to Brown, Tyler Johnson, who went to Loyola, is now at UC Davis. My little brother, actually, who's at Purdue Fort Wayne. So yeah, those are just to name a few, but all those before me and before some of those other guys have really set in stone what DePaul is all about.
So I'm glad you mentioned your brother Rashid, and also Kareem played basketball at St. Mary's as well. So what was it like growing up in like a basketball centric family where, you know, all three of y'all playing college basketball? You know, what were those one-on-one games like?
It was definitely interesting over the years to see how many games somebody could win in a day. But I feel like having two other brothers that love basketball just as much as you made it so easy to either get in the gym or just find different ways to work out. It's different ways, like when COVID, we didn't have a gym to go to, and the nets would be down at a specific courts. We'd find ball handling to do, running, things that would set us up for the next season. So, yeah, it was definitely fun.
Who do you think is the best hooper out of you guys?
I'll take that one always.
I definitely respect that. So just a quick little side question I'm wondering about, like, throughout like this podcast, we always can admit that sometimes like Division III can have like a false narrative relating to like the level of play, right? Like some people might not know how good Division III players actually are. So what was the reaction like of your peers when you ended up committing to St. Mary's for your first year?
Everybody was surprised that I went D3, but they were also happy for me that I found a place. I ended up committing really, really late. I think it was like July, end of July, maybe start of August, because I was just so stuck on where to go. But yeah, a lot of them were surprised. A lot of people thought I was Division I right out of high school, which I was, but obviously things don't always work out in your favor, which is fine. I kind of like how things ended up, but yeah.
Obviously, your brother was at St. Mary's, and I'm sure that had to influence you on committing to St. Mary's. But just talk about what else like attracted you and like to the school.
Oh yeah, like you said, my brother going there was one of the big reasons. But him telling me about his experience and. I knew I wanted to play right away, so that was big for me. The coach, Joe Fano, really, I guess, sold it to me that I could be the guy coming in and making an impact right away. And I also needed to use it as a way to – it was a very small town, Winona, Minnesota. There's not much to do, so it was really easy for me to lock in on basketball.
All right. So your freshman year, you had a really good freshman year, and – you know, the MIAC had some really good players, like, at that time. They still do have good players, but when you were competing in the MIAC, they had some, like, high-level talent, Division I talent in that that conference, like Booker Copeland and Joe Palmer. You know, shout out those two guys. And your freshman year, you had 29 points leading all scorers that game when you went head-to-head against them. So what was that like just competing against top players in the MIAC like those two guys? And what do you think it did for your confidence as a hooper, just, you know, playing games like that against them?
Those type of games always fired me up. The Augsburg, the St. Thomas games, the Johnny games, especially with a player like Booker Copeland, who I thought was clear-cut Division I from his size to athleticism to his shooting. So that was fun. Yeah, just getting after it. Those two guys, Joe Palmer and Booker Copeland, are very competitive, and I knew coming in that if I wasn't aggressive right away, we wouldn't have a chance. So, yeah.
You mentioned St. Thomas, who was a part of the MIAC the first 2 years of your college career. They ended up moving Division I right after COVID season. And I'm just going to explain a little about that situation. So, across all athletics, not just basketball, St. Thomas was pretty dominant in the MIAC and ended up being voted out for competitive parity. So basically, or essentially saying that they were too good for the MIAC. I saw that the last 15 seasons they played in the MIAC, they won 14 regular season championships for men's basketball. So just talk about like what that feeling for you or like your teammates were, like this team is out of our division. Were you guys excited? Like now we might have a chance at winning, or were you like, nah, those are the guys I wanted to compete against?
One was those are the guys I wanted to compete against, but coming that year that they were going to leave, we were actually supposed to play them one last time, but I think somebody got COVID on their team, so we didn't end up traveling. But yeah, everybody wanted to play them. I had a bit of a bitter feeling from the year before when they beat us in the playoffs. So yeah, and I knew that I could compete with those kind of guys.
I feel that. I want to talk about your game right now. So your game is very unique and versatile. You're a strong, stocky guard that can, like, if a guard's on you, you can take them down low, finish inside. But if a big's on you, you have a real craft to your game. You can shoot from the three. So just talk about, you know, what your off seasons look like. I noticed at the Division III level, your scoring increased every year. You started your career averaging 11.8 points per game, finished your career averaging just under 25 points per game. So walk me through what a workout for Raheem is like, balancing lifting and then the actual intricacies of basketball. Like, I'm going to work on my craft today, or I'm going to work on shooting. Just walk me through a workout.
Lifting, I kind of just focused on not getting as strong, more so a lot of mobility because I was already so strong. So it wasn't too much like strengthening, but a lot of it was to strengthen my knees so I could get that feeling of jumping off one back. Basketball workouts, I'd always work out in the morning. Those consisted of a lot of finishing and a lot of off the dribble stuff. And then depending on the day, I usually ran about twice a week, either at the beach or just ran around the house. That's only twice a week. And then at night would just be strictly shooting or like open gyms.
I respect that. Gym rat for sure. This is going to be the last question before we take a quick break. So obviously you were increasing your scoring at the Division III level. Did you notice anything that you had to do different going into your season at the Division I level? Like, did your workout shift at all? Were you focusing on other things?
Yeah, I was definitely focused on shooting the ball a lot more. Sometimes people gave me the shot to shoot just because how worried they were of me either creating for somebody else or finishing myself. So, yeah, a lot of different variations of different shots, off the dribble, catch and shoots, and kind of working on that range aspect that I would need.
Good answer. We're going to take a quick break, come back, talk about your transition, transfer portal, and what's next for Raheem Anthony.
All right, and we're back. So after your final year at St. Mary's, where you averaged 24.6 points per game, almost 5 assists, almost 9 rebounds, almost 10 rebounds, really, 9.2 rebounds per game, you decided to head into the transfer portal for your final year of college basketball. And you did. You ended up committed to St. Thomas. But talk about what that transfer portal was like for you, and what and why was St. Thomas ultimately the school to go to?
Like I tell everybody, it was hectic. It was a million phone calls at the time. It was just wrapping up school, so like I had finals and stuff I had to take care of. I was still studying, and I'd get phone calls in class and stuff like that. So yeah, a little over like 40 schools. Yeah, around 40 schools contacted me, and yeah, it was tough to make a decision, but then after all, St. Thomas was one of the first five to hit me up, and I had a relationship with the coach prior to me coming there because of them leaving the MIAC and my coach at St. Mary's talking to him. So yeah, and I saw how well those former Division III guys were doing, Anders, Nelson, Riley Miller, those type of guys, and Parker, who was obviously this year all-conference again. But yeah, I saw how easy of a transition it was for them. Not necessarily easy, but how they adapted to it. And ultimately, I felt like that was the place for me to be at.
I was going to ask you, like, so obviously St. Thomas moved Division I. Was that coach cutting some of the old Division III players, or did he try to keep the same roster? Talk to me about what you saw in that transition.
I look like they kept the same players. They always had a team about like 15, 14 guys. Because I think the max you could have on a division, you could have a lot on a division three team, but most of those guys aren't actually like on varsity or varsity, they'd say. So yeah, but they did play a lot of the same guys. They started like their center, their foreman was like 6'2". Point guard was like 5'11", maybe 6 foot. Their center was about like 6'4", 6'5". So, yeah, it was funny to see how they managed to win. I mean, it wasn't funny, but I knew they would win some games because of how smart of basketball they play. But it was actually cool to see them win 10 games that first year.
So you talked about how, like, you watched other guys and their transition to the Division One game, right? And obviously everyone has, like, their own journey. And I'm kind of interested to hear what you think helped you the most in your transition to Division One, because you had a really good year this year. I mean, you were 2023, 2024 all Summit League second team, Summit League all newcomer team. So you had a really good year, right? So what do you think made your transition so easy?
I feel like just not being that hard on myself. I mean, I know I could hoop, and I mean, there's not that big of a difference going Division One to Division Three other than either taller guys and more athletic. It's still pretty good basketball. Division Three has a lot of good basketball. Still got to pass, cut, be a good teammate, things like that. So I fell into that really easily. But yeah, just adjusting some of my finishes. Division One, I can't really just dunk on people as much as I could. Division Three, and I can't finish over maybe two people. I always have to hit the open man, which is fine. But yeah, that was probably the biggest thing.
So KJ and I have been having this like back and forth discussion, and it is a discussion. It's not really a debate because I think KJ agrees with me when I say this. But so I have like a little bit of a theory that I'm going to say now that I've been telling him off air. I feel like when it comes to, you talked about how like Division Three and Division One, there's not much really of a difference, right, in the level of play. But my theory really is that you could take any Division Three player that is either all conference or an All-American, and I think that they could go to a Division One team, most either mid or low majors, and like be either a starter or like a really high-level playing role player on a Division One team. What do you think about that theory? And just talk to us about that.
That's not a bad take, actually. That's not, but like at the same time, wait, are you taking like you say you're taking like an All-American Division Three player?
Yeah, so like really, really what I'm thinking of is like, so if you take, let's say, Mayak, Nescak, I think like our conference, Empire 8, what other conferences? Like the ODAC, the YAC, right?
Yeah, the YAC,
like any of those like first team guys that are on like those all conference selections, or even like I said, all Americans from D3hoops.com, NABC, like any of those guys that's selected to the teams, I feel like can go and play at the Division One level, at least get role player to starter minutes and like be productive.
I could see role player minutes. I could see role player, but right away I can't see starter for a lot of the guys.
Okay.
And I can't see like the dude for like a lot of the guys. Like you go in there and like you're literally shooting every shot, like you're gonna be all conference. But I could definitely see role player and like high role player to where like they're contemplating putting you in at the end of the game for like one of the starters type of thing.
Word. I mean, I got two things to add on to that. So if we look at the MIAC, like some of your guys past few years, the players. So you obviously had a great year when you transitioned. Joe Palmer went to Colorado State, which is almost a Power Five conference, had a great year. And then now our theory is tested with Caleb Williams. So we're going to see if our theory works out. But also you said, I can't see like being the guy. You were the guy basically on your team.
No, but I can't, you said a lot of like the,
that's fair. It,
maybe like one or two dudes like that are all conference could do that. But like a lot of them, cause some of them are like, you could get all conference. You could be like 5'8", but you average like 20 points.
True. I mean,
I don't know
how right.
You would work Division One because you might be finishing on a lot of like smaller dudes anyway. But that's why I can see them being role players, because at the end of the day, they could still play basketball. Like they could still hoop. Like they know like how to actually play the game.
Word. Nah, that's a fact.
Okay, okay. I like that.
That's a good combo, though. So I have one more thing before we get into like the future of Raheem Anthony. I noticed this, that the Summit League, the conference that St. Thomas now plays in, they do a preseason award list, and you were actually voted the newcomer of the year. So we talked earlier how like Division III players might have like a negative perception, like, oh, he can't go to this level. So what do you think that did for your confidence going into that conference already, like, with some eyes on you and people giving you the respect?
I felt it was pretty cool not having them see me play a Division I game yet and already giving me that kind of recognition. But I kind of, like, try to not pay too much attention to that because you kind of get caught up in your own head trying to win that award, blah, 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 this and that. So, yeah, it was pretty cool to see some dudes either underestimate me when we were playing or just give me the respect that, you know, that I feel like I've earned. So, yeah.
Last question before we end with some rapid fire and starting five. But you just finished your career, college career, great college career. And at the Division I level, you were second team all Summit League. And you kind of changed, like, you were the pioneer of what you set some records for St. Thomas. So that makes me wonder, like, what's next for Raheem Anthony? Are you hanging the shoes up? Or are you going to try to keep playing?
Nah, I'm not hanging the shoes up just yet. I'm actually planning to play overseas. Just signed with the agent not too long ago. So we'll see where I end up, probably around the end of July, start of August. So, yeah, that should be fun.
Who were some of the people that kind of, like, are helping you through or mentoring you through this process, if any?
My head coach in high school, who actually played overseas for a while. Both assistant coaches here at St. Thomas, one, Kenny Lowe, who went to Purdue. Tough. Two-time defensive player of the year. He played overseas for about, I think, a 10 to like 12 years. And then Cameron Rundles, who's actually from Minnesota, played at De La Salle, went to like Wofford and played about 10 years. So, yeah, I felt like I could get the best experience out of those guys because they were our defensive coaches this year.
Respect. Wishing you the best for sure, but we're going to end this episode with a little rapid fire and starting a five edition. So let us know when you're ready for rapid fire.
I think I'm ready.
All right, bet. So you guys had a couple away games this past year at St. Thomas, but I'm wondering which was the most memorable away game that you played in?
Does it have to be a win or a loss?
Nah, it doesn't have to be. It don't matter.
I'd say either Cal Berkeley or Marquette. And I talked to my coach about it because, like, a year ago in that same day, I was probably either playing, like, McAllister or, like, Augsburg, and here I am on a Pac-12 and Big East court about to start. So, yeah, I feel like one of those two was probably the best moment.
Before you ask your next one, me and you talked about the Big Girls Don't Cry mixtape that you had, so – there was like a clip in there of like in the beginning of you playing in a big stadium. Was that at Marquette?
Yeah, that was at Marquette.
That's fire. You were nervous or you were chilling?
Nah, I was, to be honest, I was chilling. I thought we was going to win that game.
I mean, you guys lost to them by a single digit, so it was definitely a winnable game.
We turned it over too much. But
did you ever take a moment and like you said that you told your coach like, it's crazy how I was just playing Augsburg or, you know, playing Division III and now I'm on a Pac-12 court. Did you ever take a moment either in warmups or even, you know, maybe at the free throw line and be like, damn, I'm really here?
Yeah, definitely at Cal Berkeley when they were announcing the starting lineup. And I'm number 24, so away games, they announced the last person with the biggest number. So, yeah, definitely while I was getting my name called up, it was like, wow.
All right, and then final rapid fire question. Who was like your gym partner like this last year at St. Thomas? Like, who was the person that always like got in work with you, maybe always got under your skin playing one-on-one or where they were guarding you? Like, who is that person for you?
For a while, for like just a little bit, it was actually Brooks Allen. We started shooting together like early, like right before the season. But then after that, it became a freshman named Ben Oosterbaan, who's actually from Chicago, who just redshirted this past year. And he's going to be really good. So, yeah, he'd always text me, let's get in the gym. We got up a million shots, a lot of one-on-one games. And he has like a bigger frame, so he's taller. He's athletic. So, yeah, it was a good challenge.
I respect that. This is my first time jumping in on Rudy's Rapid Fire segment, but I have one question. So you mentioned that you were like dunking on people in Division III. So I'm wondering, do you have a favorite play or highlight throughout your college career?
At Division III?
Either. Just your favorite college basketball memory or highlight.
Probably last at St. Mary's D3. I think I went back to Chicago. I had like 41-15 and I hit it like a half court game winner.
The game, I saw that game winner. It was tough.
Do you practice like those half court shots or nah? That's not something that you really practice.
No, I don't practice half court shots. I practice shooting from deep, but that was kind of way too deep. Like I practice like NBA and a little past the NBA, but not like that deep.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to end with a starting five edition. So if you were a coach assembling a lineup 1 through 5, who would your lineup be? And this edition is going to be MIAC players throughout your career.
Do we got to be – can I – is it like position? Like I have to go by position or no?
Yeah, so if you were a coach, you can try to like put somebody who's not really a one at the one, but it's do it by point guard through center.
Could I put myself up there or no?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, no,
yeah.
I'm the coach. Never mind, I'm the coach.
No, you just – yeah, you can add yourself. Player coach, yeah. Bill Russell.
Yeah, I'd be the one probably – I put Joe Palmer at the 2, Eli Cave at the 3, Booker Copeland at the 4, and a 5. A 5, man. And what's that kid's name? What's his name?
What school did he go to? I could look him up real quick if you want.
I'm trying to think if it's a kid from St. John, the big man from St. John's.
Zach Hansen.
It's either him or the kid from Carleton that I played last year with the shoots like the fadeaways and stuff. I can't remember his name either though.
Yo, I'm not going to lie. That's a tough starting five, but no love to my boy Caleb Williams is kind of crazy.
But look, though. I can have a bench or no?
Nah.
he would come off the bench just pure inexperience, like, because, like, those are, like, older guys. So
I respect that then.
But he would have been the 6th person, though. Like, if I was able to put, like, another
That's
team.
Fair. That's fair then. But – that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We appreciate you joining us. It's been a good episode and definitely big fans and looking forward to seeing what you do in the future.
Appreciate you guys for having me. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2. If you haven't already, make sure to go follow all the socials at Not Even D2. You can catch every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm your host, KJ Allison. And I'll see you next episode.